If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's after nine, and thank you so much for staying with us. As you know, this is where we get all your legal problems up front on the table, and it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to tell us your name. Just send in the question. If you don't want us to say who you are, it's okay. Just say you're anonymous. We can do this on WhatsApp. But it's always better if you call, actually, so that Ntabiseng can engage and get some of the details that you may have missed. So Ntabiseng, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Nice to be back, Ospimela.
Sure. There's a lot on the table,
yeah.
Because I'll get to some of the questions. There are a lot of questions that have already come through. I'll get to some of those questions. But you want to start by focusing on the Child Justice Act.
Yes. It's Youth Month. And a lot of our children, unfortunately, whether we want to admit it or not, find themselves in a lot of hot water.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand as parents what we are in for when, let's say, our youngin, who is between the ages of 10 to 17 years old, what would that mean?
Was it not last week where there was a case of a young...
A 12-year-old boy who drove a car and killed a 14-year-old.
Correct. Today, a grade 12 killed a grade 11 student. Today. I just couldn't imagine. Mm. And in fact, I just kept thinking to myself, what? And this particular student, I don't know how old he is, but this particular student had not come to school. The grade 12 student had not come to school, only came to school after school to come and kill the grade 11 year old.
Imagine.
So waited for him outside.
Mm.
As soon as he was going to board his transport, went and killed him. It's just shocking.
It is.
It's shocking.
And these are things that happen almost every other day, if not literally every day in our country.
And how do you treat
a child
like that. In that instance?
Yeah. Yes. So the Child Justice Act was enacted specifically for children who commit crimes.
Mm.
Because the Criminal Procedure Act is just a generalization. And so we had to, or the legislature decided we need to figure out how to determine what we call criminal capacity, which is the understanding of the crime that has happened.
Mm.
So that aspect actually came to light in this case, the 12-year-old who drove the car.
Mm.
Because it was the first time I'm hearing it in the media where the NPA says the child is going for assessment first.
Mm.
So the Child Justice Act has been around since 2007, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
And basically what it entails, it says when is the age that a child is deemed to have criminal capacity.
Mm.
So from ages 0 to 9 years old, you're automatically deemed to not have criminal capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So you do not have any understanding of right and wrong. You don't understand anything, and therefore you cannot be tried, even if you have committed such an offense.
0 to 9.
Yes. Of course, with the law, it develops. So it could be that there could be a case I could have missed wherein maybe a child who committed such a heinous crime was dealt with differently and deemed to have criminal capacity. But from 10 to 14 years old, the court now has to establish criminal capacity.
To what extent?
Correct. Mm. Do you understand what is happening? So instead of it being a situation where it's, in this one, it's a culpable homicide where this child killed a 14-year-old, or in the one that you just gave, it is
premeditated
murder. If it was in a normal criminal court situation, we'll be dealing with a Schedule 6 bail application for the matric student, and with this one, Wakalp will be dealing with the Schedule 5 bail application. So the Child Justice Act kind of breaks it down similarly, but it's different schedules. So Schedule 1, Schedule 3, and Schedule 5, right? So Schedule 5 being serious, Schedule 3 being like the Schedule 5 in a normal situation, and Schedule 1 being, you know, minor crimes. But before a child can appear in court, they have to go through assessment with a social worker. A social worker who will go through the questions, find out if this child understands, firstly, what right and wrong is. And then once that is established, do you understand what you have done? What is it that you have done? What is the process? Take them through that. And that report has to be put within the docket so that if this matter goes into court, any defense attorney such as myself will then come into a court and say, where is the report that says this child has criminal capacity, has understanding of what is happening in the court? And here's an implication that parents don't actually know about. Once this matter is enrolled in the court, you as the parent or guardian, with each and every postponement, with each and every appearance, you have to be there. Mm-hmm. If you're not there, they issue out a warrant for your arrest. Wow. You should be there. Because that child is not deemed to be old enough to appear on their own. So these are the things that you also need to be aware of when your child is finding themselves in such a situation. So it's not always automatic.
When there's no parent, is it the response? You know, some of these are terrible cases where, you know, these are households that are run by children. Who then takes the responsibility then?
A guardian has to be found. And if there's absolutely...
Can you imagine?
Yeah. A guardian has to be found. A child cannot appear in court without an adult or a guardian being attached to that particular circumstance.
Yeah.
And if there's absolutely none, then the court can appoint a guardian, a social worker, whatever the case may be, who will assist this child throughout their process. Mm. Yeah. So I found it very, interesting.
Well, I mean, I also want to say, as I said, I don't know how old the great 12-year-old is. The grade 12 student.
Yeah.
Because that, I think, will have also very different implications depending on whether he's still deemed a minor or not.
Yes, yes. Because if he is or she is 18 years old, then they're automatically going to be trial as an adult. And the fact that you waited for that premeditated murder is a hefty sentence. Mm. You are looking at life. You're not going to get anything less than life imprisonment there.
Yeah. Okay. Mediation in children matters.
Ooh. See, this one, it touched home a little bit because for family matters, in divorce proceedings.
Yes.
What usually happens is that a family advocate report is sought out in order to assist a court on what to do, especially if the divorce is an opposed divorce, right? Okay. So the family advocate is appointed for the family advocate to assess whether or not this child understands, if they're of age, of course, to get to understand what is happening. But if they're not of age, we're not even going to consider their feelings per se. We're going to look at the papers, let the social worker get in and give recommendations to the court based on an assessment of the home of both parties, and then assessing the parents themselves, and then also assessing the child in relation to their relationship with each parent.
Mm-hmm.
That is in terms of the mediation of divorces, right?
Yeah.
So this only applies to parents who were previously married, or after the divorce, if pertaining to those children, they can still go back and get a family advocate involved. It is part of the process. This doesn't apply, or didn't apply rather, to parents who were never married. They had children, but they were never married.
Oh, wow.
So in this particular case, it ended up all the way to the Constitutional Court, wherein the argument was that that particular section 4, I believe it is, was deemed to be unconstitutional because it discriminated in that way.
That the parents were not married.
Yes. So now what happened is that Thabiseng and Phemelo had kids and a kid. And then they parted ways. They were living abroad. And then Thabiseng came back. And then eventually Phemelo came back. And then as time went on, as life does, Thabiseng remarries.
Mm.
When she remarries, her and her husband, they want to now immigrate to Australia, I believe it was.
Mm.
And then informs the father of the child to say, this is the idea, this is the process, this is what we want to do. And then dad objects to all of these things because he says, okay, if you are going, not a problem. We can rather have primary care be with me because I'm remaining here. The child's life is here. And then you can have visitations as and when we can work around that. So it started in the High Court, which led all the way to the Constitutional Court. There was no real agreement that came between the parties. And part of the arguments that dad raised was that Section 4 of the Mediation in Certain Divorce Matters Act 24 of 1987 did not
cater for unmarried parents.
Yes. Why? Because the social worker has to give a report to the court. But if you're unmarried, you have to get a court order first that instructs the social worker to come and get involved in this. So it's a matter within a matter, which now becomes unnecessarily expensive and makes the matter necessarily long. Right? So now the High Court, when it was there, found that to be a problem, to say that I am not an expert in children's matters. I'm not an expert in dealing with the mind and emotional aspect of the parties. But if the act is limiting how I'm supposed to do this, because a mediator stroke social worker cannot be appointed to deal
until the court directs,
then I'm stuck. And then the judge and the High Court said, no, man, let's refer this to the Constitutional Court for this to be dealt with, because I deem it to be unconstitutional, because it's also going against the rights of the child itself. Because at that time, the child was now old enough to verbalize, you know? And then now, by virtue of that, it's discriminating against the child to say that because your parents weren't married, you do not have the same rights and privileges of a child whose parents were married. And that was an issue. And then the Constitutional Court actually confirmed it and said, yes, actually, Section 4, when it speaks about that, we totally disagree. It should not be that a social worker will only be appointed to children whose parents were either married before,
unless instructed by the court.
Correct. But here's the thing that gets to me. That's why I said it struck home, because to this day, this matter was decided in 2023. I only found out about it today when I was researching for today's topic. When you have parents who were never married and you want a social worker to be appointed, they will tell you, I don't have a court order, so I'm not going to get involved. It's a constitutional court order that instructs them that they have to get involved whether or not these parents were married previously. I have two cases currently where the party just, they have a parenting plan. They're not even fighting, but a social worker has to kind of approve it and say that yes, it is in accordance with the law, and we don't have any objection to it. But because the parents were never married, they are refusing to do so. So now we are forced to go through the match court process.
The entire process.
Yes, just so that a social worker can say, oh, okay, well, but here is a constitutional court decision that says that thing, we're scrapping it. You are involved whether or not the parents were married.
It's so
before.
Interesting, Tabi, saying that you bring that up, because it certainly means that a lot of the newly developed law sometimes slips.
Yes.
And people miss it. And it takes a while for the public and society to, you know, to wake up to the fact that no, things are changed. Things have changed. It has been constitutionally being changed.
Correct. And also sometimes it takes a while for it to filter down to the departments themselves.
Yeah, that's it.
So just because we have case law, does it mean that their superiors are aware that of this case law? Have they communicated it? And what is the process being put in place for that to be dealt with? So that one, I found that it should be quite helpful, especially for a lot of parents who are trying to co-parent.
Yes.
In situations where we need a court order just to make it official, because we don't want a situation where, you know, things are left unsaid or undone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a question here. I think it's longish because it comes in two parts.
Okay.
Please ask Ntabi, saying if it's true, boy pays lobola, then boy wants a traditional divorce. He calls a family's meeting, boy and girl draft an agreement to share assets and maintenance of their only daughter. Mm. They're going to submit an agreement to the clerk of the court.
Okay.
Hang on. It goes on to say, 21 days later, they will be giving back the agreement documents. Now, as divorce decree stamped by court, can that be treated as a legal divorce decree?
Mm-mm. For a second there, I thought they were on the right track. It sounded like they did a settlement agreement and then now they were going to court to actually get a proper decree. No, what should happen is that a summons still needs to be issued, unfortunately. To that summons, then you can attach the settlement agreement. Get a date on the unopposed roll in whichever court you're going to, and let the decree of divorce say, it has to be a proper court order that says party X and Y are officially divorced as of this date, and the settlement agreement is incorporated to be part of the court order. It's actually a 2-3 liner, that court order. So that is missing. It's not going to be binding anyway. Even if it has a court stamp, it has to have a magistrate stamp or a judge's stamp that confirms it's a court order. It has to be ordered by the court that. That's how it should read. So I hope that helps.
I don't know if this person wants me to call them by name, but I don't know if we've answered the question. So you still, they still need the court.
Yes. Yes. It can't just be going to the registrar or whatnot. The registrar would be enrolling it into the court roll so that it can be heard before a magistrate or a judge. And then those two people or individuals would be the ones who would then give a decree.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay. This is also another long one. As a high school teacher, this is good evening, Ntabi. Saying as a high school teacher and a handcrafting enthusiast, I've witnessed firsthand the challenges faced by students who aren't academically inclined. Many drop out of school without employable skills. This project aims to empower these young by teaching them DIY handcrafting. So I think he's talking about a project. So they're asking, so I'm not sure if this is a question directed to you because you are a legal person. But there seems to be an issue with children who don't have the capacity, and it makes them from the fact that you spoke about children's right. My brother, I think it's Barbara. Barbara, I'm not sure what the question is. Barbara, just maybe give us what the question is. I see what the program is about, but you wanted to ask Ntabi Singh a question. Please just clarify what the question is, Barbara, so that Ntabi Singh can then assist. Okay. So Ntabi Singh, if we go back to the young person who today stabbed and killed the grade 11-year-old.
Yes.
Let us say they were under 17. What then would be... So, to me, as a layperson, this child planned, thought about it, planned what time to come, what, you know, instrument to use, and knew exactly what time the other child was around to kind of do the deed. How would it be different as a 17-year-old? And especially for me, the bigger question is, if the child then turns 18 in the middle of the trial, then what?
All right. So between ages 14 and 17, you are presumed to have criminal capacity. So akira between 10 and 14,
you're no capacity at all.
You need to determine if you do have it. But 14 to 17, you're presumed to have it. But even with that, a social worker still has to assess you to determine whether or not that presumption can stick, or it will have to go away. Same thing as if somebody who is deemed to not have their full mental capacity when committing a crime. We are dealing with Section 77 all the way to 79 to determine if they have criminal capacity. So we're going to assess him, find out if he understands what it is that he has done, the consequences thereof, and why he did it. Based on that report, then the matter can get enrolled into the court roll. Now, what happens if the matter is still on the court roll when he turns 18? He's still going to be tried as a minor because the incident happened when he was a minor.
Gotcha.
The argument will only therefore be from the prosecution side to say, in aggravation of sentence, to say that even though they are a minor, they had full understanding of what was happening, and therefore we would request that the court maybe consider him to be tried, or rather sentenced, as an adult, because they were maybe a few months shy of being 18 or whatever the case may be, and therefore they are deemed to be in a more capable position versus a 14-year-old on what it is that they were doing.
All right. Yeah. We've got Barbara on the line. I think that text was from Barbara. Barbara, good evening and welcome.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Barbara. Welcome. And Ntabi Singh is listening.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, ma'am. Barbara.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. We are right here, Ntabi Singh. I think she wants to hear
from
you.
Yes, some good evening.
Okay,
sorry.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Ntabeng, I just wanted to find out how I can do this in a legal way.
Yes.
Because I'll be involving learners. I'll be involving underage kids. So I need to know the legal part. How can I do it? How can I start this project?
What project is this? To try and educate kids? What's the project exactly?
Barbara, just maybe if you can explain the project to Ntabiseng, she can hear you.
And Ntabiseng, I'm a high school teacher. Uh-huh. So now I have this hustle, the DIY hustle. Mm. So I've realized that there's a lot of learners who are dropouts, who are not academically inclined.
Yes.
So I wanted to help them. I wanted to start something that can help these dropout learners from high school.
As a school
Come again?
As a school?
It can be a school, yeah. Okay. Even if it can be private, but I just wanted to know how to start it. Maybe I'm not asking the right person. I don't know, but I thought maybe I'll get some advice from you on how to start it.
Okay, so it sounds to me that maybe you would want to start something like an NGO, or if you want to do something like a school for, I don't know, alternative learning, you would have to look with the school boards, the Schools Act, and see how it is that you are going to incorporate that. So I think the best place to start would be the Department of Education, share what the process is if you're going to take it that route. Because if it's a DIY situation, it means you're teaching these kids how to work with their hands, how to do whatever the kids, instead of dealing with the academics. So you need to go to the Department of Education, understand what the requirements are for something like that to start, and then if it's something you can do, then you follow the steps that you're given. Alternatively, if it's an NGO wherein it helps children who are in that kind of situation, you have to work with the Department of Social Services as well, so that they know that what you're doing is in the best interest of the kids, because they will not let you do something that involves minors without them overseeing it and also giving it a thumbs up.
Okay.
Makes sense?
All right. No, I hear you.
So thank you very much, Barbara. Barbara in Kempton Park. Do you want to take a quick break, Ntabiseng, so that we can then come back with more? Thank you so much for staying with us, everybody. Ntabiseng Dubazana is still here. Very happy to take your questions on 086-000-00959 or WhatsApp notes on 063-688-0959. You can send those right through, all your legal questions. So there's a question from Balisa that came in a bit earlier on, Ntabiseng. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an interesting one, and I think a lot of people can identify with this. And this is, Balisa says that she owns a property and her water bill, so it seems like this is from the city of Johannesburg, her water bill is now sitting at 130,000 rand. She says she's been back and forth with the municipality on this issue because it turns out that her neighbor, shares a meter with her. But she's not aware of how the change of ownership of the meter and when it happened.
Mm.
So she's paying essentially for her own meter as well as the neighbor's meter. She's been back and forth at the municipality to try and deal with it. They're not. Her fear, though, is that if she left the account
unpaid,
she's in the red.
Correct.
But they are not doing anything about the neighbor who I think illegally transferred the meter to her.
Mm.
What is her recourse?
Do the legal thing. Thing is, unfortunately,
that's the
downside. After 130. That's the downside.
1,000.
Because the municipality... All right. Oh, God. The municipality, how are you personally? They will take you from pillar to post. That's the downside. But if a letter from an attorney comes in demanding these things, only then are things rattling and you can do something. That's the downside. Unfortunately, you have to get an attorney involved. let them write a letter to the municipality informing them this is the situation. This is what Ntabi saying in the city when I went to go see her, said this, that, and the other. This is what Pimelo said, etc., etc., so that it is detailed and documented, and then give them a time frame for them to respond. And failure to respond, you take them to court because you're going to continue getting a double water bill, and nothing's going to change because no one, literally no one, is going to do anything about it.
But Ntabi is saying that it's money.
I know. But play the long game. What else are you going to do? Because that water bill is going to go to 250,000 or a million. Then what?
Okay. Mm. Let's continue with most of the questions that are coming through. This one is coming from okay, this is Paul. Paul is asking about an accident, saying that he unfortunately, what a tragedy. He unfortunately ran over a child, reversed into a child who he was not aware was, just in his blind spot when he was reversing. He has acknowledged that it was a mistake,
yes,
but he really did not see the child. The family are very keen for him to be arrested as someone who murdered their child. He understands the law is that this is a process that needs to take its course.
Happen, yeah.
But what happens in he? I think he wants to know from you, what are his chances of him explaining that and it being proven that it was an actual mistake, not something that was deliberate?
So you're going to be charged with culpable homicide. You're not going to be charged with murder.
Either.
So culpable homicide is negligence. In other words, you lacked the intention to kill this poor child. The best way to usually do it is when you speak to your attorney, when this matter is eventually on the roll, either your attorney goes into negotiations with the state for a Section 105A plea, or you plead directly in terms of 112. So in other words, the 105A is wherein a plea agreement comes into play to say that he's going to be found guilty, unfortunately. That's just the terms of culpable homicide. Okay, it depends on the facts of the case. But usually for culp, you're going to end up being found guilty. But then you can end up being a suspended sentence. So you can be out on bail. So because you did not run from the scene, that always works in your advantage. Number two, you not keeping a proper lookout. These are the words that the state is going to use. You don't keep a proper lookout when you were driving. May have been in the blind spot. That can be explained away. That could be something the state could use. The other thing that could work in your favor in terms of what the sentence could be, or sometimes a withdrawal, depending on how much all of this plays into the scene, it could be a situation wherein the age of the child. Why was the child left alone? If the child is below five, for example, where were the parents? So that blame could essentially fall on the parents, which could exonerate you. So these are the things that would have to be looked at once the docket is opened. So they're going to open an inquest docket in any event. So in that inquest docket, they're going to inquire what happened, and once the inquiry has been dealt with and the magistrate has given their decision on that, then it can be turned into a culpable homicide case. And based on the evidence that will be collected as a result, it may determine whether or not you'll end up being found guilty of culp or not. But the likelihood of you being sentenced to whatever, 10, 5 years, is quite slim. You may end up just having a suspended sentence, unfortunately.
Okay. Lester is asking a question about a child that they have. Lester has run into financial problems, and he says that the child has been in the same school since grade one, private school, and he has had no problems until this year when he lost his job. The issue he has is with the school, who he says is looking to ask the child to leave school, and yet the child is in matric. Lester's asking, what rights does the child have? He says he understands that he is liable for the fees, but he's wondering what rights does the child have since it's his matric year.
I actually had a colleague who dealt with something quite similar. And what they did is that they wrote a letter, the law firm wrote a letter to the school, citing the children's rights, Section 28 of the Constitution. Right, wherein the right to education and the best interest of the minor child come first. So, considering you're in matric, considering this child is about to finish, let this be a fee payment agreement between the parent and the child, and then let the school allow this child to finish the schooling, but let that be dealt with through an attorney or somehow, if you're not able to negotiate it with the school. Because if you are paying but not paying the way in which they're doing, they cannot legally speaking kick him out because you are failing to pay the amount that they require. You have paid, you just haven't paid what they want to. So even if we're to look at it in terms of, even though they're not a credit facility, but there is a payment that is coming through, so that can still be dealt with. They cannot or should not kick the child out. What they can do is issue a letter of demand, maybe, which will end up being a summons for them to collect their fees, but let the child be allowed. So start first and negotiate. And if you fail, then get an attorney, someone who can just help you write a letter to the school outlining all of these things.
We've got a voice note. Let's take a listen, because I'm not sure if this person wants us to know who they are. Let's just take a listen.
Evening, ladies. My name is Devoho. Good question. I'm divorced. I've got a divorce degree. But when I look at my status, it still says marriage. So how do I go about changing my status? Do I go to Home Affairs or what's happening? Can you please clarify for me? Thank you.
Please go to Home Affairs. So once you have your decree of divorce, that's where it ends. It doesn't automatically translate to Home Affairs. So you have to take your decree of divorce to Home Affairs so they can upload it onto the system, and the system can reflect that you are now divorced. So court and Home Affairs do not share the same anything. So just go to any Home Affairs and then update it. You'll be fine.
Okay. I've got another question here from Palesa. And the question from Palesa is, well, they... Oh, okay. I don't know whether this is the same case, but maybe related. They were able to go and approach their school. It seems like it's a similar kind of case.
Oh, okay.
But the school was not having it. My concern, though, with our case is that there's limited time. The child needs to stay in school until the matric exams, whereas they want the child out until we resolve the matter.
No. That doesn't sound right. Because if you, like I said, if you are paying something, they cannot say
oh,
that.
Oh, she doesn't say whether they are paying.
Yeah,
or not.
The hope is that you are paying something. They cannot now say that. Let the child stay out of school until it's resolved. It means there's a way to resolve this. There's a mediation that can be dealt with.
I want a mediation.
Wrong.
Mediation. Money talks. No mediation.
It's not right. I would also...
But let us assume that she's not paying anything. I mean, is there...
Yeah, in that situation when you're not paying anything, it is quite difficult to try and negotiate because...
But the when you say negotiate, it gives me the impression you're on your own. No legal system is going to protect you. You must just accept the fact that it's kunzi.
It's likely, very likely, that no legal system will be protecting that at all.
All right. We have, I think it's Silani, a court order to have my ex-husband and I reach a divorce settlement, 50-50. He refused to settle, disregarding the court order, and I call services of a liquidator. My ex is still refusing. He's now married to another wife. Another, while I wait on. My ex is a senior attorney. I'm not laughing. What is my recourse? Ain't type thing.
Sounds like there was a decree of divorce and you said that assets but should be divided 50-50.
He's ignoring the
apply
decree.
For a contempt of court. Getting a liquidator and whatnot, all great, but then apply for a contempt of court. I get it's a senior attorney. So if you make an application for a contempt of court, you're threatening his license. So it's an application to the court through your attorney who assisted you for a contempt of court order. Contempt of court is a criminal offense. So no attorney is going to be allowed to go and practice with a criminal offense. So yeah, do that and then let's see what happens.
Diane is saying that they have heard you before talk about maintenance court,
yes,
right? But what Diane wants to know is how would she be able to use a garnishee order process? Would she be able to do that if the ex is not paying
Correct.
The maintenance, or does the court need to do that for her?
So she needs to go to the maintenance officer. The maintenance officer is then told that here's the court order. You give them the court order where this matter was initially heard. The court where this matter was initially heard, and then you tell them 1.5 per month. He has skipped 2 months. Then they can now go and attach a garnishee order to his payslip with his work. And then going forward, then you will see the money coming in. Yeah.
You don't have to agree.
No.
It will just come out of your salary.
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a listen to a voice note.
No.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break first and then we'll come back to all of your questions. Remember, the number to dial is 086-000-0959 and you can send voice notes on 063-688-0959. Thanks so much for staying with us. And Tabi saying Dubazana is here. She's our legal expert here to take all your legal questions. Please send those through on WhatsApp on 063-688-0959. Better yet, you can also call in on 086-000-0959. All right, here's a heartbreaking one. This is Penelope. Penelope says, my brother passed away about a month ago. He had been divorced for about 3 years to his wife. They did not have children, except that when he got divorced, he fell sick and he carried on living on his own in his own home. And we were looking after him. He has subsequently died, but his ex-wife has come to claim even the house that he died in. From what we can see, things had been settled through the divorce, but we don't know, because there is no will. We don't know what the agreement was. What can we do as a family?
Find the case number, get the decree of divorce. So if there was a settlement agreement attached to the decree, it's going to be attached even in the court file. So if you can find, I don't know how long ago it was, hopefully
3 years or she says they were divorced for 3 years.
Oh, then it's easy. It's still in the court. So go to the court where the divorce happened, get the information, inform them that he is late. You need the decree because the wife is asking for X, Y, and Z. Because that decree of divorce will then tell you what it is that she's entitled to and what it is she's not entitled to. If the settlement agreement says the house has to be sold, this and then the other, then yes, she would be entitled to claim against the estate in that manner. But if the decree doesn't say that, then she has to step aside. But even with that, because there's no will, he died intestate. So she doesn't have the powers to be the executor of the estate. She still has to claim from the estate, from the executor. So who is the executor of the estate right now? I know it's only been a month, but you guys need to sort that out as soon as possible. Appoint an attorney, because it sounds like his estate is already greater than 250,000. So appoint an attorney is going to assist you with doing the initiating papers so that an executor can be appointed. And then that woman, the ex-wife, would have to claim from the estate and not just take over. Because right now what she's doing is not legal because it's not following the process of winding up an estate.
All right. Here's one from Palesa. Palesa says, my partner and I had been living together for 10 years. We were not married. We did not have children, but we shared responsibilities equally. He then has passed on. The family wants to take what they think were my partner's assets, but we bought assets together. What rights do I have?
Unfortunately, you don't have any rights apart from claiming for what? Maintenance, so to speak, from the estate. So if the movables that are there, you can prove that it was paid, for example, from your account. Yes, it could have been bought together, but somebody paid for something in that house. The TV was bought by him, the radio was bought by you, whatever the case may be. If you have receipts, which I doubt you have, for the past 10 years, then you can account for the movables. But when it comes to the immovable property, if you guys bought it together in a joint bond or whatever, then the family is only entitled to 50% of that joint bond. You do not have the same rights as a spouse, unfortunately. Yeah. So you do not have even the right to be the executor in that estate. So you get what you get. There's nothing much you really can do there. You, unfortunately, it's too late now, but it would have been easier if you were a spouse. So right now, you may have a claim for maintenance if you are supporting in one form or another against the estate. If he had a pension fund or a provident fund, you could have something from there. But the family at this stage, because it sounds like he also died intestate, whomever they're going to appoint to be executor of the estate, it may end up that you end up with nothing much, really, at the end of this.
We've got Busisiwe in Alexandra. Hello, Busisiwe.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
I'd like to ask a question. I've been married with my husband for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And when his mother received a RDP house, and his mother died 2012. So now we've been having challenges. Now he says he wants the divorce and he hasn't been working, but I have been making improvements. I've extended the house, built the rooms. So I'm not sure about the process because he wants to go through with the divorce. Will I benefit anything? How do we work?
Are you married in community of property?
Yes.
Okay, so unfortunately, what you did to the house, extending, renovating it, is neither here nor there. Everything is 50%.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Wait a minute.
Did you not say the house is his mother's house?
Yes, when he was the only child.
Was it transferred into his name or is it still under mom's? It can still be transferred to him. Was it transferred to him?
I'm not sure about that, but he has all the documents and everything.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if it's an improvement on the property that is not belonging to him, you can claim against estate ya mama or even him as the executor, if he's the executor, quote unquote, your what we call an unjustified enrichment, because it wasn't his property in any event, but he's reaping the benefits of it for the extensions. But that will only apply to the house and only if the property is still in mom's name and not in his name. If it is eventually in his name, you can go to Nto Deeds office in Johannesburg. Go and check, Corina, is that property registered under his name or not? You don't really need him to show you the papers. Go there and find out what's happening, because you're married to him. You should be able to get that information. If it's under his name, what you did to the house is neither here nor there. However, with that being said, when it comes to divorces, you can have settlement agreements, even though the marital regime that you are in says that everything should be divided 50-50, including liabilities, ne? But you can still say in your settlement agreement that you keep this, you keep that, and then no one claims anything from no one, and then that settlement agreement is made an order of court with the decree of divorce. But I think these are things, if you guys are amicable or you are having a civil enough relationship, you can discuss it before you start the process of divorce.
I'm not sure if she's still there.
I think she may have gone. Yeah.
Okay. She has left us. All right. We've got a long one here in Tabise. Mm. This is Tato. Tato says, how does one go about getting information on shares that a group of elderly people used to have many, many years ago? Now they're elderly and are trying to get hold of someone who used to administer their shares, but I'm unable to know where to begin and how to find information on what happened to the shares or money, since it looks like the company is liquidated. We have some of the documents that show that their percentage of the share, and some of them still have the share certificates. I do understand that their money or shares might not be there anymore, But how I think he wants to say, how do I help them to find out what happened to their shares? They say that they've at least at some point taken the guy who used to administer their shares to court, but they didn't get any assistance from the court. Is there a way of finding out what happened to the shares since the company liquidated? This is from Tato from West Park in Pretoria.
100%. So if it was liquidated, then it has to go through the master of the High Court. So that process has to be dealt with the master. So if you can find the name of the company and hopefully the case number, because it would be a situation yahore ga liquidation or when it's insolvent, ne, creditors are called in to come and claim any monies, which will include the shareholders. Go and see what happened there. That will determine for you what happened, what the process was, were the old people even considered as creditors, were they even mentioned, was it even advertised, because it has to be advertised as an insolvent estate as well. So yeah, go to the master's office, find out what's happening there, get a requisition of the court file, and then make copies and see what it is that happened there, and we'll tell you at least a little bit of what happened there.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one wants to remain anonymous. And she says, Alson Tabi, please advise on what's the process of claiming upbringing costs by hubby or us from a deadbeat baby daddy who refused from the onset after he took me to court to pay maintenance for his 11-year-old son. That's short and sweet. Does that
so
make
they
sense?
Want they want to she wants to claim upbringing maintenance for the 11-year-old son that lives with baby daddy.
I think I see.
Okay.
Let's read it again. Please advise on what's the process of claiming upbringing costs. Okay. I think the cost of bringing the other child. From a deadbeat baby daddy who refused from the onset after he took me to court to pay maintenance for. Okay, no, it's two different people.
Okay.
Two different children, I think.
All right.
So there's money for. It's a deadbeat father.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know whether it's one child or many children. I don't know. But this individual brought an 11-year-old to this relationship.
Mm.
And this lady had helped him to bring up the 11-year-old.
Mm.
But he has subsequently disappeared and not paying the maintenance of their children.
Mm.
So I think that's...
So she wants the cost of raising the 11-year-old.
What about Liam? No, no. I suspect it's maintenance.
Mm.
I don't know what I don't know. Is it whether it's maintenance and also... the cost of bringing the 11-year-old, the one at Lenlie.
Yeah.
So what would be interesting is whether the 11-year-old is still with the lady.
Or with the dead.
Or are
dead.
You saying you want him to pay you back the
for
money?
For the 11 years.
Oh, no, 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 no. She actually does explain. She says, from the onset, he took me to court to pay maintenance for his 11-year-old. Okay. So... Yeah, so these people, I think, have split.
Yeah.
And in part of his divorce, whatever,
she paid maintenance.
He insisted
for
that she must continue paying maintenance for the 11-year-old that he came with.
Which means it was a court order then. So how are you going to change?
He took, I think she's trying to say, had the audacity to take me to court for 1 hour high, and yet he's still not paying for his own children's maintenance.
Yeah, if it was a court order, you cannot claim anything, unfortunately, because that
no,
order...
No, what the maintenance by Ababahai?
If she wants maintenance at Banabahai, then she must take him to the maintenance court. And
I think she's angry more than anything.
No, she sounds very upset.
I'm not going to call you by name. Urlo Batwa Anonymous. Two things. I think you need to go to the maintenance court for your own child.
Yes.
But what about the 11-year-old?
I think it's a court there's still order. From what
she must
saying,
continue paying maintenance for 1 hour.
If she doesn't want to continue, she must take the matter to be rescinded. Make an application for a rescission of judgment.
I get Nishon. How does that work?
So Oya court and say I don't.
No, no, no. How the court even allowed that to happen?
Best interest of the minor child will always be paramount. Doesn't matter if your that child is yours or not.
So, Eddie, unkeleza masawa.
Yes.
Ne?
Yeah.
Utlilele ngwana. Ne? That I've been helping him with.
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
Because he has got his own financial problems. Mm. I do this out of the goodness of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
We get a divorce,
mm.
and I must continue to pay yes. Eddie's child's maintenance.
Yes.
He takes me to court
yes.
for 1 hour high.
Yes.
And I must continue.
Yes.
And he still runs away from his own child.
Yes.
So I'm busy paying for his child.
Yeah.
He has stopped paying for our children.
Yes.
Never. Never. I kampane ra tswaro. Never. Never. I get it. Na ke busy ke patela ngwana hae. Who's probably not with me. And I must also look after my own children
yes,
because he's.
Ma'am.
But he took me to court to pay for his child's maintenance.
Yes, ma'am.
Never. Bakampane bangwala. What's the worst that can happen?
Like you just said, batlangwala.
Really?
Yes. 18 months.
What kind of? I never. Which all courted in as alonanta be saying, are not reasonable. 18 months.
18 months. Up to 3 years.
Because I'm not paying for someone's child.
You're in contempt of a court order. You're someone's child is neither here nor there. You're in contempt of a court order.
I don't know. Hey, this legal thing. I don't know. Folks, it's been real. Let's get back tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Debbie saying we'll see you next week.
Next week. If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.